Hello, lovelies. Welcome to the Fat Joy podcast, where we talk each week about how to flourish in an anti-fat world. I'm Sophia Apostle, a fat professional coach who loves talking to other fat people about what it's like to live within oppressive systems that marginalize our bodies and how we still dare to have the audacity and courage to reach towards our collective liberation and embrace our joy. Please know this is an adult content podcast, so there will be swears, we will be talking about harms we've experienced, and we will be rebelling against weight stigma, diet culture, fat phobia, ableism, racism, etc. You can get more Fat Joy goodness, including how you can support the podcast through my newsletter at fatjoy.substack.com. And for episode transcripts, book reviews, and show notes, head to the Fat Joy website at fatjoy.life. I am so glad you're here. Enjoy this episode. Hello, lovelies. Welcome back to the Fat Joy podcast. I'm Sophia Apostle, and today I have a really special guest. This is someone who, Lama Rod, I didn't tell you this before we started recording. I just spoiled it. We have Lama Rod Owens. Woo! What I wanted to tell you though, Lama Rod, is you've been on my list of people I wanted to talk to for quite some time. I'm very organized. I have an Excel spreadsheet. I have links. I have all the information, and I kind of work down through that list. And then I had one of my listeners send me a message on Instagram saying, hey, love your podcast, but you're missing someone. You need to get Lama Rod Owens. And so I thought, okay, this is the time. Let me just reach out. And I did. And you said yes. And I'm honored and in awe. And thank you for being here. And that person who messaged me has a question for you that I'll ask as we get into the interview. And they were very thrilled at being able to kind of, through an intermediary, aka me and this podcast, ask you a direct question. So thank you. You've made two of us very, very happy. And I'm sure most people listening are going to be very happy as well. So Lama Rod, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself? Who are you?
Yes. So many things. What comes up first is I am a Southerner, and living on the ancestral lands of the Creek, Cherokee, and Muscogee people, also lands where my ancestors have lived and worked as enslaved people as well. As living here on this land as freed people. I am Black. I'm slightly petty, but I'm actually in recovery from that.
Recovery from pettiness?
Yes. I've recently been challenged to do a little better. So I'm working on it. I'm fat, which is lovely to say without shame. I am a spiritual person, right? Spirituality is incredibly important for me. It is the reason basically I'm still alive, right? Buddhism, right? Kind of converting to Buddhism, becoming a teacher in the Tibetan tradition of Buddhism, which is where I get my title, Lama, which means teacher, has been one of the most important things that I've done in my life, because it really was the moment when I really chose to get free from a lot of pain, right? But spiritual too, even beyond Buddhism, where I just am so deeply appreciative to experience the complexity of the world, of both the physical world and the unseen world, and to ally, with the unseen world to create a life that's meaningful, that's informed, that's dedicated to helping, right? to relieving suffering, to reducing harm and violence, and so forth. Who else am I? I mean, I'm a lover, right? So I'm in a dry spell right now, but you know, you hold on. I'm just, you know, just a person trying to give a shit at the end of the day. I mean, essentially, I mean, that's really the main thing. Like, I'm trying not to check out as much as I used to, and I'm trying to stay in tuned to the world and people and the land and my body, and really just trying to consume the chaos and not have the chaos consume me.
I love how you just summarized that piece. I think a lot of us are struggling with how not to let the chaos consume us right now. And I get weepy thinking about just all the things that we have to hold in order to not check out. Like, that is a lot to ask, it feels like. And every year that goes by, I think, surely this is like the breaking point for the globe, for the world, for individuals. Surely this must be it, and it must start to get better. And then it doesn't, Lemarod. And I'm like, how much can we hold? I mean, so far we're kind of doing okay. I don't know. We're not actually. I feel hopeless a lot of the time. As I imagine a lot of people you talk to do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is the coming. This is why I am doing the writing and the teaching that I'm doing right now and have been for several years, you know. But I it's so interesting. I find that this period is a period of hope. I feel very hopeful. I feel optimistic. I feel, you know, I don't like to just kind of throw out a bunch of cliches, but here we go. I mean, it's like, it always gets darker before, you know, it gets lighter. Or there's this, you know, as my mom used to tell me when I was younger, you know, there's always storming in the night, but joy comes in the morning, you know, which is kind of a biblical reference. So, you know, I see us actually in the upswing. I think we're like lifting, right, coming back into balance. But that means you have to come into relationship with the things that we have been pushing away, you know, about our collective and about ourselves as individuals, as suffering people who are trying to like work through that suffering, right? So I think what's being called for a lot of folks now is they're being called to practice in a way they haven't ever practiced before. Like, you're the kind of work that we have to do is a deeper, more diligent, complex work, right? And when I talk about consuming the chaos, which is actually the subject matter for my next book that I'm working on right now.
Oh, good. Thank you for that. Yeah, yay. Heard it here first.
So, like, you know, when I tell people, like, you know, when I talk about consuming the chaos, it means that, like, I'm just practicing. Like, I am relying on a lot of different resources, right? I'm relying on the earth, the unseen world, my ancestors, right? I am intentionally choosing to be grateful, right, to experience gratitude, because there's so much to be grateful for, right? Even in our deep, overwhelming experiences of suffering, you know, and isolation and numbness and, you know, and so forth, right? I'm happy to be alive. That's not always been the case, right? But I am so grateful to be alive. But I'm not just grateful to be alive, to be alive, right? I'm grateful to be alive and to be able to be of help, you know, right now. And that's, I celebrate that, because I could be just throwing gas in the fire, you know, like, you know, people do. We know when they're consumed by their suffering and the chaos, right? So I'm here in the world, getting up every day and committing myself to the struggle of liberation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. I feel like my version of that, in my much smaller version, is this podcast. It's like, fat people's stories deserve to be heard. This is a liberatory act. It's a rebellious act, and it's one that I can do. And I feel like that becomes a lot of my purpose for staying in the struggle and doing the work of liberation, being in the discomfort, examining my own unconscious biases that show up every now and then and frequently. And it's, yeah, I think that's such important work. And so many of us turn to teachers like yourself to help us figure out how to do that. Also, like, reminding us that we should, and why should we, you know, because it'd be so much easier to just work my job that I love, eat my dinner and watch Netflix and just never be in the discomfort of the reckoning of this world right now.
Yeah. And that's such a beautiful, you know, sharing, you know, like, I think you embody something important, that something I'm trying to get people to kind of recognize with themselves is that, like, figure out what your thing is, what your work is, and just do that. People think that, like, the only way to be in the world is as great influencers or change makers or activists who are just leading these great movements. And, you know, and that's not what, you know, most of us are called to do, you know, like, helping. Like, what does it mean to just be in your neighborhood and just, like, help your neighbors? Like, what does that look like? Right. You know, or, like, what's your advocacy? How are you educating people? What do people need to know? What are the stories that need to be told? You know, what voices need to be uplifted? And get into that, like, creating the pathways, the avenues, and the resources so voices are heard and people get the resources that they need to survive. That's important work, right? And it may be invisible work. Right? Like, you may not be celebrated, right? You may not have a holiday named after you, right? You may not win the award, you know, for the greatest person. That's fine. Like, we have to let go of that, you know? Like, just do the work, right?
Yeah, I've mentioned this on the podcast several times, but I'm going to plug it again because I think it's what really shifted this for me. What you're saying is, I was in, I believe it was like some kind of anti-racist training with a facilitator. It was a facilitated session. And this facilitator mentioned and actually brought to our attention the social change map by Deepa Iyer. And it had this, I think it was 12 different ways that you can be an advocate, an activist, like, and it was like, you could be a weaver with, or you could be a caregiver, or you could be a blah, blah, blah. And there were all these names for these different ways, these different roles, really, that I had never thought. I literally just really had only thought, oh, I just had my only way to be an activist and to protest and to work towards liberation is to march in the streets. And that, that one image really started me down the path. And that's why I keep talking about it, because I think, like what you just said, I think it's so important for people to know that you get to find your flavor of how you want to participate in our global liberation. It doesn't have to just be, I mean, you can march in the streets for sure, but also, you know, there are so many other ways to do it. And I think, yeah, I just think that's so, such an important point. So if anyone's ever feeling like, oh, I don't know what I can do, oh, go check out that map. I'm going to include the website again. It's there. And just think about what are your unique gifts and skills, right? That can be used to contribute. I'm a talker. That's what I do. So I was like, I'll just use my voice. That is something I can do.
Exactly. Like a communicator.
Yeah.
Right. You know?
Yeah. And I like spotlighting other people's stories. I don't need to be, I mean, I like being the center of attention, but I don't need this to be all about me. I really want other people's stories to be shared. So, yeah. So thank you for highlighting that that's a really important piece to this. And I think also too helps with the overwhelm and the helplessness that we can feel up against these billion-dollar corporations who are making all the decisions and pulling all the strings. And we feel, or at least I'll speak for myself, on days I feel very, very small.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, even to kind of this, the domination of corporations and in general, what so many of us are feeling in terms of that there has to be a different way of living together and being with one another that isn't dominated by capitalism and patriarchy, you know, and so forth. No, colonialism, imperialist ideas. Like, so many of us are waking up to the reality that we can make a different choice now. Right. And then for me, you know, in my line of work, compassion is the key. Right. And I think anyone else with not a lot of training or studying of compassion may hear the word compassion and say, whatever, that's so, you know, whatever. But for me, compassion is one of the strongest forces in the universe because, again, compassion means that we stay attuned to the suffering of ourselves, of others, of the collective, right? And then we make a choice to disrupt that suffering, right? We're compelled to do that.
That's the piece, right? We have to see it first.
Yeah.
So compassion is the way to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it protects us as well. You know, it keeps us from objectifying people. You know, it's like people stay human, right? People remain people who are experiencing suffering, just like we are, right? You know, so when I look at like corporations, my compassion for corporations says that like, yeah, this is like such a artificial, superficial way of organizing and being in relationship with people and getting resources met, right? And that isn't sustainable, right? Does it really create the kind of liberation, you know, that corporations think they're creating, you know, or fooling themselves, you know, into believing, right? You know, the compassion helps us stay clear.
Yeah.
About things, you know.
You're making me think about the word that we often use instead of compassion, which is empathy.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I'm going to ask, like, I'm curious, you're making me really think about the difference between those two. So what are your thoughts on that? Why is it compassion versus empathy?
Right. Well, empathy is the root of compassion, right? Like the relationship, the tuning into the experiencing, right? The consideration of other people's experience, right? And empathy is wonderful, right? But you need action with that. And this is when we start getting into compassion. It's like, I feel the suffering of the world. Great, what am I going to do? Right? Right? But it's more than that because there's one other kind of aspiration here, which is everyone is suffering. And we all deserve to be free from suffering. Right. And that takes us into compassion from empathy. I'm experiencing all the suffering and I don't want people to experience this because I don't want to experience this. So therefore, what am I going to do? How am I going to change first and foremost to become an agent, helping people to be liberated from suffering?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Thank you. Thank you for kind of drawing that. Connecting those dots for me, that sparked something in me for sure. So Lemarad, I feel like I want to talk to you about a million things. And I also am going to bring us to fatness because it is one of the identities that you claim. It's how you walk through the world. And of course, this is the Fat Joy podcast. So what has been your relationship with journey with this word fat?
Well, you know, I've been fat most of my life, except during, you know, a period of maybe 2.5 years when I was experiencing anorexia in my mid-30s, when I got super slim, dangerously slim, you know. But for me, like, fatness has, I mean, I've always lived in this body. I've lived in the ways in which people have created the meaning of my body for me and then forced me to participate and to buy into that meaning of what fatness is, right? Of course, fatness meaning, and you know, with me growing up, this fatness was like, oh, you know, you're just a failure. You know, which I reacted to by overexcelling and other things, right? You know, so I think about Janis Ian's song, you know, I knew when I was 17, you know, I forget the real title of the song, but I've written about it, you know, but that song where it was like, oh, I'm fat, and so therefore I won't be celebrated. You know, I will always be considered not good enough, you know. And that was something that over all the years of my, you know, through my adolescence, through my early adulthood and so forth, that I just kind of carried. I was like, oh, I'm just like, you know, I don't belong. Right. I think part of a lot of my activism, which really started in my teens, was really this unconscious struggling against being told I don't belong by fighting for people to belong. You know,
I really get that. I pulled a quote from your book, which is called The New Saints. And there's a whole beautiful chapter. Well, it's almost like chapters within a big section or within a chapter called Body. And there's this quote that really hit me, which was, I mean, a lot of it did, but I pulled this one out, which is that you write, my earliest memories of suffering were related to my body, to the physical pain I felt, to all the unmet cravings of hunger, thirst, and pleasure my body craved. I felt indentured to my body. In other words, my first experience of the carceral state was the experience of my body. I read that and I was like, oh, fuck, that is so true. As a young person, in my case, and what I know from so many people's experiences, that this is like this carceral state, this entrapped state, indentured state, is one of those early experiences. And then it had me thinking about, wow, and then doesn't that just get normalized? So of course, like that to me, then I was like, oh my gosh, is this what leads to, you know, like the prison domination complex? Like it just, cause it's like how we feel. Isn't this just the normal? And it just broke my heart reading this for my own like past self.
Yeah, you know, I think that was a really important thing for me to write in the book, you know, to like really bring this out. Because for me, carcerality, it happens on so many different levels, right? It's more than just the political state and the collective and, you know, but it's the individual, the way for me as a fat person, I have been policed and surveilled and controlled and manipulated, you know, and considered less than, right? And how my body has been tied to all of the like unsuccessful shit in the world, like is because of fat people, You know, and so, you know, when we tie into this discussion, like race and gender and sexuality and class and ability and so forth, then you really start getting into like these serious expressions of carceral logics, you know, which really means, which really translates for many of us at many of these intersections of this privilege, meaning that what we've been taught is that we don't belong, that we actually are actively being erased from everything, you know, and how people, because of that, those carceral logics, you know, that are applied to our bodies, how there are no boundaries for us anymore. Like the way that people feel as if they have authority to cross our boundaries, to patrol us, to critique us, right? To tell us like how to lose weight, you know? And then, you know, and this is all I grew up with, right? And again, like for me, compassion is what began to save me as I grew older, to kind of break out of the ways in which I was participating, you know, and buying into these attitudes, you know, project onto my body.
Yeah. I am really curious about that part, that time in your life where you did start to break free from your own internalized anti-fat bias and really being and kind of separating from the diet culture that, you know, is the water that we swim in. How did you bridge that?
Yeah, I mean, really, like through the kindness of really good friends and lovers over the years, who were the first people who told me I was beautiful or handsome or sexy, you know. And, you know, and growing up in like queer male community or a gay male community, I had to actually completely leave, you know, gay queer male spaces, right? Because of the, you know, the deep insecurity around bodies manifesting as this kind of fixation around appearance and presentation and fitness, you know, as being valued and celebrated. Like I had to leave those spaces because they were the primary experiences of violence in terms of the communities that I was a part of, you know. So leaving those spaces, but moving into queer spaces that were much more diverse, you know. When I started really in my early 20s, spending more time and trans communities, right? And really developing really close relationships with other trans folks and being invited into community with them. I can't tell you how much healing started happening for me, where I was given permission to be in my body, right? And to make choices about my body, where no one was telling me, oh, you're too fat, where instead I was like being told how attractive I was, you know, and how that love, that compassion as well, was always being reflected back to me. And that really gave me the space to really start actually understanding what, you know, well, really understanding what I thought, you know, and how I felt about my body for the first time, really, you know. But, and, you know, and then it was also, you know, again, for me, you know, Buddhism, meditation, like where I really use these practices to get into the trauma, you know, and what I've survived, you know, being a fat person moving through this really like very ableist culture, right? And so all that started really coming together, but I'll tell you, like, it was really being in relationship with people who celebrated my body you know, and it was just overwhelming for someone to be attracted to me, you know, and this is in my 20s, you know, when I was really going through this, right? Yeah, and this is why I tell people all the time, find good people to create community with. Find your people, you know, and learn how to leave the spaces where you're not loved.
Hello, Fat Joy friend. I'm popping into this episode to give you an exciting update. Fat Joy is now ranked in the top 2%. 2% of all 3.4 million global podcasts, which is a really big deal. You may have heard, because I've been talking about it, that I am aiming for this podcast to hit the top 1%. And you can help the podcast get there by making sure you've subscribed to the podcast and giving us a 5-star rating. And if you want to be a little extra, I love extra. If you've gotten something out of these episodes, if they've supported you in some way, please write a review for the podcast. I love these. I put them all on the website. They mean so much when they come in. No surprise, I believe that fat stories are worth telling, and I am so grateful to bring you a new story each week and honored that you keep coming back to listen. So thank you, lovely, and enjoy the rest of the episode.
You know, like I think it was Nina Simone who said that if love isn't being served, get up from the table. And I take that seriously. If I'm not feeling love in a space, then it's not where I belong. You know, and I have that privilege now to do that. I've worked hard to be able to have a choice about where I go, who I spend my time with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the more people who live with, you know, marginalizations, this comes up quite a lot, is these leaving of spaces that they've had to do. And I've had to do this, and it's very painful. You know, I've done this with members of my family, and it's heartbreaking, like literally heartbreaking. And also, for the first time, again, I'll speak to my story, but as representative of many conversations that I've had and heard from people, but for the first time, I'm putting my care first, right? So it is, yeah, that's a really hard part of this journey, I think.
You know, and yes, the hard part of this in particular is holding other people's insecurities.
Yes.
You know, like it's, I see so much suffering when I'm looking at people who live in the gym. They're just like obsessed with their bodies, right? And I think with, you know, I've been in the scene, you know, that advocacy scene and working, you know, in my way, you know, through my work to bring awareness to this. And I, you know, I hear all the critiques and the feedback, you know, it's like, oh, we're jealous and blah, blah, blah. We're lazy, you know. And it's actually not about that. It's about the ways in which we're choosing to tend to our insecurities, right? And how those insecurities manifest for us and how those manifestations are masked as, you know, healthy lifestyle and, you know, wellness, you know, and it's weaponized. You know, I look, you know, there are these conventionally beautiful people, you know, and I'm talking about, you know, just my experiences within gay male culture who are just like gorgeous. You know, and they only hang out with people who look like them, who can reflect, you know, back to them their own like illusion of perfection. And all I feel is like insecurity and trauma. You know, like I think it's wonderful, like to have agency over your body, to like create your body in a way that feels good for you. And at the same time, is that an expression of insecurity? You know, or do you, is that your actual liberation? Do you feel liberated engaging you know, in that kind of expression.
Yeah, it reminds me of Sonia Renee Taylor talking about the body hierarchy and how we're all kind of like climbing over each other to get to the top of this ladder, which is, you know, white, male, rich, you know, all the able-bodied, not like neurotypical, all these things. And it's so interesting, like what you're saying. I'm imagining like stopping on whatever rung you're on and being like, okay, hang on. Do I actually want to go up? Like, or am I just following what I've been told? I should go up. I should follow the crowd. It is that deeper inquiry, which unless we're, I think tell me what you think about this, but I think even in my own experience, especially with my family, I think the hard part of this is in order to question, where do I want to go on this ladder at choice? I have to like look at the ladder. They have to like my family, it would require them to question in a very deep way their belief, their whole belief system about health and wellness and my fat body and what does it mean? Like, it's almost too much, I think, for a lot of people. And I have a lot of compassion for that, having gone through a journey myself. It's taken a decade. It's been painful. I still, I'm sure, am got decades more ahead of me. But yeah, once I saw, I couldn't unsee, and I wanted to do the work. But I think this is what I hear from a lot of fat people, a lot of people living in other marginalizations, is that the disappointment that other people aren't able to look and see what feels so clear once you do start down this liberation path.
Yeah, exactly. But isn't, yeah, and you know, it's not about liberation. It's about performance, right? It's about trying to feel desired, to feel wanted, to feel valued. So I'm going to perform something. I'm going to become something. I'm going to look a certain way, right? And not that, you know, and I'm not saying that's necessarily bad, but we have to be aware.
Yeah, what our motivations are.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I'm always making choices like that. Like everything that I wear and how, I mean, I'm always about, yeah, how am I showing up? Like who's looking? Like, you know, but I know what I'm doing. And at this point, I've reversed this kind of process where instead I'm not really seeking validation and approval from people around me, because I've been able to do that for myself.
That is like the best ever, by the way. I just want like to say that, to know that, to feel that, best.
Exactly. I mean, it's such a blessing. Like, I know so many people are on this journey or trying to start this journey. And I just want to tell folks just to keep doing it, because it's like just to be in the world and to say, you know what, like I'm not dependent on your validation.
Mm-mm.
Right.
Ugh.
You know, and the confidence that comes from that.
It's true. It's true. Yeah.
So, I mean, again, it goes back to compassion always for myself, for others. Like that's where I'm rooted in.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have another quote that I want to read to you, because I think it's another question that is often reckoned with people who live in larger bodies. So again, this is from the body chapter. You wrote, "My body is an expression of my mind, an expression of my awakened nature, an emanation arising from the great boundless ocean of emptiness, space, and energy potential that can either liberate or incarcerate. My body is a thought rising from the emptiness like waves rising from the ocean. When the wave of a thought rises, it takes form and wraps itself in earth to form my body's structure and weight, with wind becoming its breath, fire becoming its warm energy, water giving it moisture, blood and fluidity, and consciousness filling it with intelligence and awareness. So to me, that's poetry. Gorgeous. Thank you for writing that. It's so beautiful. The images of the elemental nature and this connection to something beyond our body is what I want to ask you about, because I feel like, and it's interesting. I do a few things, but one of my things I do is as a creative writing coach, and I co-created a workshop called Writing Towards the Body. And as we were running different groups through it, this thing kept showing up, and it was people of all sizes. It wasn't limited to just fat people, around like, God, you keep having us focus on body, but I want to focus on the fullness of me. But also, my body is the one that's been harmed by diet culture, so it does need to focus. So I guess, I don't know if this makes total sense, but I felt it when I read this paragraph in your book, like the holding of the both and of I am a body and I am also more than just my body. I am like the fullness of me. And yet so much of the healing has to happen through the body. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Okay, tell me. That tension feels very challenging. And am I over-focused on body? Are we over-focused? How do we hold a balance? How do we move from body to wholeness? Is that healing? I don't know. I'm kind of in that right now.
Yeah. Well, I think it's definitely about balance, right? Because I can't bypass my body and think I can get to the wholeness, right? But I can't bypass the wholeness and just kind of get stuck in the material nature of my body, right? It has to be both, right? And when I was writing that in particular, you know, part of my goal was to help us to understand the sacredness of our bodies, but to understand our bodies as an expression of the natural world, right? So my body in this moment is natural, right? Which is the opposite of what we've been told. Our bodies aren't natural. Like, it's not natural to be fat. You know, I mean, so many other things, right? It's not natural to be trans, right? It's not natural to be queer. I mean, so forth and so on, right? Of course, our understanding of body is deeply rooted within white supremacist, you know, culture and colonialism, right? It's just like, this is what an ideal body is. And the rest of us have been subjugated, you know, around that violent idea, right? You know, but my body is natural in this moment. And this is what I do in my practice. You know, I say, yeah, my body is this expression of the natural world. And just like the natural world, my body is also asking for balance.
Mm-hmm.
And what does balance look like for me and my body? Right. And I think that's the journey that we have to go on. What does balance, a natural balance, mean for me? Right. And letting go of what it looks like and getting really rooted in the feeling, you know, of what balance feels like.
Is that individual?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's individual and collective, right? You know, the collective reflects the individual. Individual reflects the collective, and so forth, right? But it's definitely beginning as individual work. I have to figure out what my balance is, and then I connect or expand into the collective, right? You know, which is, and that's a harder piece here for you know, a lot of folks. You know, it's like I intentionally keep bringing our experiences or our awareness back to the individual, right? Because I think it's real easy to bypass my individual experience to kind of merge into the collective, right? But I can't support and lift the collective if I'm not doing my work first.
Yes, very true.
You know, but yeah, you know, so like, I just, and the sacredness as an expression of the natural as well, like to be in awe that like my body is the expression of like everything around me, of the wind and the, you know, of the sun and water and earth. Like, I just, like, that's balance for me, feeling that connectedness to the natural world and understanding my body as also an expression of this natural world, because that's what's been disrupted for us. Like, we've colonialism and you know, and capitalism and so forth, they've created this artificial, you know, simulation, you know, that's really about domination of the natural world, right? Including the domination of our bodies in this system. And we have to reclaim that by actually returning our bodies to the natural world, you know, to the realm of being creatures, right?
That reminds me of Mary Oliver's, "Let the soft animal of your body love what it loves." Oh, my favorite line ever.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So if people who are listening are wanting to go deeper into this, like to begin to connect to their body as and find that balance with nature, with sacredness, with the creature that lives within. You've mentioned meditation as a very, you know, kind of a practical and one of your tools to do that. Like, how do people start to do this in a very practical way? Do you have any entry points for people listening?
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, for me, like really being in the natural world, like, I mean, just like being outside, like lying on the earth, like when I talk about this in the book too, like these really simple things that we no longer do anymore, but to like connect, you know, to become aware of the functioning, the balance of the natural world, right? And to link what we experience as natural to our own bodies. And how do I, from that, say, you know what, my body is as natural, right, as the sun shining and this river, this creek bubbling through. Like, what, how is my body an expression of this really balanced natural process? Right. And what am I manipulating or forcing to happen against my body's will? Right. You know, in the book, I talk about how it's like, it's not that I'm trying to like liberate myself from my body. I'm actually trying to liberate my judgment.
That was the other quote I had pulled out. Yeah. Cause I was like, that's it. That's what, that is so perfect. Yeah, I love the way you said that. And again, may I read to you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not trying to liberate myself from my body, but to liberate my body from my judgment of it and my resistance to its clarity. That was huge. To free my body from the violence of this judgment is to free myself from the violence of how everyone is shaping my body to meet their needs. That's so beautifully written. And the clarity piece, like my thought immediately went to, oh, that's like my intuition, my body wisdom. My body knows things before my brain does. And that's actually just rooted in neuroscience. So is that kind of what you mean by clarity?
Yeah. I mean, the body is talking to us. It's communicating. I think the great work, part of our great work here is like understanding how that communication is happening. And what things mean. Of course, there's, you know, of course, trauma and different kinds of woundedness really disrupt the ways, right, in which we're in tune to our bodies, right? But there's a clarity to the body. And part of my process has been learning how to just listen, right? And just like, and just learning that language, right? And I think there's, you know, on top of that, I think, you know, the great obstacle here for many of us is just this deep disembodiment. You know, it's just like, why would I want to live in this body when everyone's told me, you know, it's not good enough?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there is some kind of, there are some leaps that we have to take, absolutely. But I think these leaps are easier when we are in relationship with people who can reflect our beauty back to us. Like, it's just so much easier. Like, all these practices are easier when there's someone in my life who says, you know what, you're beautiful, you're wonderful, you're amazing, you're handsome, you're sexy, you're desired. You know? And that for me has often given me the confidence to get curious and to say, what are they looking at? You know, what am I not seeing for myself? But everything is complex at the same time. So there's really never just one simple thing that you can do. It has to be a multitude of things at once.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I had an experience where I did a period of silence when I was at a retreat. It was 24 hours of silence, and I'm a talker. Like I said, I've never done silence before, and I'm like 100% extrovert. So this being in silence, and they were very strict. It was not even reading or writing. So like no words. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do this, but what happened for me in that when I was given permission, aka ordered, to not distract myself in any of the ways I usually distract myself, like with other people through talking, to really just truly experience presence. And we were in a beautiful natural setting, is I was outside all day in different spots, different fields, just sitting. Just being. Even at one point, because we weren't allowed to look at time pieces, so I didn't know what time it was. I think I woke up at like 2 or 3 in the morning, but I don't know. And I went outside, and there was even a point where there were eyes. And I thought, oh gosh, I'm kind of in mountains. I hope that's nothing that would like harm me. And it didn't. I just kind of sat there. I was like, I'm just going to trust. I don't know. I was scared, but there was something about being so, I don't know. It was hard to do, but also then it stopped being hard a couple hours in, where it was just like, I kind of just became, my body became part of the ecosystem in a way that I had never felt before. And that was a huge turning point for me. This was kind of at the beginning of my body liberation journey, where I felt part of that bigger something, and the stars were gorgeous. It was again out kind of in a more remote location, and then to see other creatures kind of moving through the ecosystem as well, and really trusting that it was, you know, contrary to every movie I've ever seen, they are not trying to harm me. They're not, it's not a bear that's going to eat me. They're just doing their thing. And it was just this really interesting moment of the role of my body in space. And being really attuned to what it was wanting to say to me. And I think I heard it probably for the first time, you know, towards the end of that 24 hours, when I just got out of my own head enough to listen.
Which, I mean, that's such a blessing.
Yeah, and really, truly a privilege that I think a lot of people don't get. So I'm very aware of my privilege in that way. Yeah, and so appreciate the gift of that. Yeah. I have a question for you from one of the listeners. That's kind of a beautiful tie-in to what we're talking about right now. The listener's name is Asani Sewell, and I'm sharing that with permission. So Asani wrote, having collective care and support is so important for people in marginalized bodies, fat folks, BIPOC, LGBTQ, etc. But how do we build collective care in a culture where we are taught to depend on ourselves or only our family units? I sometimes feel so lonely in my need to be deeply and authentically connected to others.
Yeah. You know, I think about some of these huge shifts for me, particularly over the past 20 years, where I've confronted these narratives about what it means to live in this particular culture. And I've had to like consciously disconnect, disrupt those narratives and say, you know what, I'm going to do something completely counter to what the culture narrative is, right? And I think the activism that many of us are really moving deeper and deeper into, yes, collective care, mutual aid, you know, but actually coming back to this sustainable liberatory idea that, like, community is how we get free, right? You know, ultimately, because we're living with people, right? And because of that, we have to establish relationships that we need, you know, liberation through relationships, you know, and like the things that I need, I have a right to ask, you know, for those resources, you know, and I have a right to ask people around me, right? Because for me, it's not always just like what you have to give me, but I'm also, because of compassion, I'm also saying, what do I have to offer as well? Like mutual aid, like what do I have to offer, you know, and what do I need to receive, you know, at the same time? I think many more people are getting aligned with this attitude and saying, no, it's like we have to create broader communities of mutual aid and collective care right now. You know, we have to kind of start cutting through these narratives about how I have to rely on myself, you know.
That rugged individualism that is so, I feel like that, I mean, maybe this is a conspiracy theory or maybe it's just true, but it feels like that has been so baked into the way that is, I would say, especially the U.S. operates. And I always wonder, wow, was that someone with incredible forethought? And, you know, or did that just happen because of, or is that just baked into, I mean, I guess it is kind of baked into the colonizer mindset, right? But yeah, it's so in there.
Yeah. And it's just, yeah, as we're so indoctrinated into it, right? You know, but for me, again, it's like I have to always kind of highlight the nuances here, is that particularly from the Buddhist perspective, like, yes, we're helping each other get free, but really I have to do my own work to really get free. Like, no one can just put me on their backs and carry me to liberation. Right. It's like I have to choose to get free, and I have to commit to my personal work of getting free while also helping others to be inspired to get the resources that they need to get free. Right. So there's always going to be a level of loneliness here, you know, and that's just something we just work with. We have to hold, you know. So yeah, like, it's, let's start creating the communities that we need to see. Let's start communicating with one another. Let's start sharing more resources, right? You know, let's get out of this mindset that, like, you know, I don't have what I need because I don't work hard enough, you know, and start saying there are systems that have intentionally been put in place that restrict resources and unequally distribute resources. Let's tell that truth as well. You know, because I come from people who worked really hard, right? And strangely enough, we're not millionaires. You know, I mean, it's just, right.
Yeah. Yeah. I really also love how you named that when we do our own work to get free, there will be loneliness. And that's okay. That's kind of what I heard you say, is that's part of this individual process. And I feel like there's a both and in there. And we can also continue to cultivate community and connections and be surround ourselves with communities of care, with people who do want to have those authentic connection, like Asani mentions here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this has been an incredible conversation, Lamorad. I feel like I have 30 more things I want to talk to you about. And I'm going to come to our final question, which is one that I also ask every guest, which is about joy. Because I often joke, not joke, that this podcast was created out of my rage because I needed to find joy and not just be that horrible feeling of helplessness and despair. And so I kind of created this podcast about joy. And then I joke, well, we talk about rage and all the hard stuff. And then at the very end, we come to joy. So this is the joy moment. What do you think joy is? How do you connect to it? Yeah, I feel like I'm on a quest to figure out how we interact with joy. And I'm really curious what your position is and if that's informed by, you know, your Buddhist spirituality.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my experience of joy is definitely informed by Buddhism and my practice. But for me, joy is space. You know, it's the space to respond, right? It's the space to experience everything. Right, not just the suffering and the struggle, but also the gratitude as well. For me, joy is part of this, what we would call the natural expression of mind. Right, there's joy there that's always present. Right, and joy isn't meant for me. Well, at least for me, it's in my practice. I don't use joy to bypass or to cover up. I use joy to hold everything. You know, so that way you stay connected. Like I can experience joy and also still understand that there are real struggles still happening right now for a lot of folks, including us, right? Like it doesn't bypass anything, but it gives me the space not to be overwhelmed by the suffering, which, you know, includes despair, hopelessness, rage, you name it.
I love that. I've never heard it described in quite that way. And I really appreciate that. I feel like that's such an interesting way to phrase it. And I can feel the truth of that. Joy is the space that allows me to hold it all, is maybe how I would say it. That's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you, Lamorad. Thank you for this conversation. Thank you for the work that you do in the world. I my whole page is scribbled, filled with notes. I'm like, oh, remember this. I feel like I've learned so much from this conversation. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Before we go, I'd like to read a poem because poetry can reach our hearts in a different way. Poems can have us feel in a different way. And that's what this podcast is all about. Expanding our hearts, deepening our empathy, and inviting in joy. So each week, you get a new poem. Oh my goodness, what a conversation with Lamorad. I'm going to share a poem by Ada Limon. Another one, last week's was also Ada. This one is called Sanctuary because it feels like the energy of the conversation with Lamorad, that feeling of both groundedness and etherealness of holding the full paradox. So here is Sanctuary. Suppose it's easy to slip into another's green skin, bury yourself in leaves and wait for a breaking open, a breaking out. I have before been tricked into believing I could be both an I and the world. The great eye of the world is both gaze and gloss, to be swallowed by being seen. A dream, to be made whole by being not a witness, but witnessed. Thank you for joining me today. My hope is that you're feeling a little less alone and a little more seen. So until the next episode, you can find me on Instagram at fatjoy.life, on YouTube at youtube.com/@fatjoy, and on Substack at fatjoy.substack.com. And please do check out the episode notes for how you can connect with my amazing guest and for the links to the poem. All right, lovely, I am sending you off with my best wishes for an abundantly fat joy day, and we'll talk again soon.